way to attach them perfectly to the rover would tip. I didn't even bother to test. It was obvious by looking, and I didn't want to break anything. I haven't removed the chunk of hull from the trailer yet. Half the holes are drilled, but I'm not committed to anything. If I left it in place, I could have 4 stacks of 7 cells. That would work fine. It's just 2 rovers worth of what I did for the trip to Pathfinder. Problem is, I need that opening. The regulator has to be in the pressurized area, and it's too big to fit in the unmodified rover. Plus which, the oxygenator needs to be in a pressurized area while operating. I'll only need it every 5 sols, but what would I do on that sol? No, the hole has to be there. As it is, I'll be able to stow 21 panels. I need homes for the other 7. There's only one place they can go. The sides of the rover and trailer. One of my earlier modifications was saddlebags draped over the rover. One side held the extra battery, stolen from what is now the trailer, while the other side was full of rocks as counterweight. I won't need the bags this time around. I can return the second battery to the trailer from whence it came. In fact, it'll save me the hassle of the mid-drive EVA I had to do every day to swap cables. When the rovers are linked up, they share resources, including electricity. I went ahead and reinstalled the trailer's battery. It took me 2 hours, but it's out of the way now. I removed the saddlebags and set them aside. They may be handy down the line. If I've learned one thing from my stay at Club Mars, it's that everything can be useful. I liberated the sides of the rover and the trailer. After staring at them for a while, I had my solution. I'll make L brackets that stick out from the undercarriages with the hooks facing up. 2 brackets per side to make a shelf. I can set panels on the shelves and lean them against the rover. Then I'll lash them to the hull with homemade rope. There'll be 4 shelves total, 2 on the rover and 2 on the trailer. If the brackets stick out far enough to accommodate 2 panels, I could store 8 additional panels that way. That would give me 1 more panel than I'd even planned for. I'll make those brackets and install them tomorrow. I would have done it today, but it got dark, and I got lazy. Log entry. Sol 209. Cold night last night. The solar cells were still detached from the farm, so I had to leave the hab in low power mode. I did turn the heat back on. I'm not insane, but I set the internal temperature to 1 degree Celsius to conserve power. Waking up to frigid weather felt surprisingly nostalgic. I grew up in Chicago, after all. But nostalgia only lasts so long. I vowed to complete the brackets today so I can return the panels to the farm. Then I can turn the damn heat back on. I headed out to the MAV's landing strut array to scavenge metal for the shelves. Most of the MAV is made from composite, but the struts had to absorb the shock of landing. Metal was the way to go. I brought a strut into the hab to save myself the hassle of working in an EVA suit. It was a triangular lattice of metal strips held together with bolts. I disassembled it. Shaping the brackets involved a hammer and... well, that's it, actually. Making an L doesn't take a lot of precision. I needed holes where the bolts would pass through. Fortunately, my Pathfinder murdering drill made short work of that task. I was worried it would be hard to attach the brackets to the rover's undercarriage, but it ended up being simple. The undercarriage comes right off. After some drilling and bolting, I got the brackets attached to it and then mounted it back on the rover. I repeated the process for the trailer. Important note, the undercarriage is not part of the pressure vessel. The holes I drilled won't let my air out. I tested the brackets by hitting them with rocks. This kind of sophistication is what we interplanetary scientists are known for. After convincing myself the brackets wouldn't break at the first sign of use, I tested the new arrangement. 2 stacks of 7 solar cells on the roof of the rover, another 7 on the trailer, then 2 per shelf. They all fit. After lashing the cells in place, I took a little drive. I did some basic acceleration and deceleration, turned in increasingly tight circles, and even did a power stop. The cells didn't budge. 28 solar cells, baby, and room for 1 extra. After some well-earned fist-pumping, I unloaded the cells and dragged them back to the farm. No Chicago morning for me tomorrow. Log entry. Sol 211. I am smiling a great smile. A smile of a man who fucked with his car and didn't break it. I spent today removing unnecessary crap from the rover and trailer. I was pretty damn aggressive about it, too. Space inside the pressure vessels is at a premium. The more crap I clear out of the rover, the more space there is for me. The more crap I clear out of the trailer, the more supplies I can store in it, and the less I have to store in the rover. First off, each vehicle had a bench for passengers. Bye. Next, there's no reason for the trailer to have life support. The oxygen tanks, nitrogen tanks, CO2 filter assembly, all unnecessary. It'll be sharing air with the rover, which has its own copy of each of those, and it'll be carrying the regulator and oxygenator. Between the HAB components and the rover, I'll have two redundant life support systems. That's plenty. Then I yank the driver's seat and control panel out of the trailer. The link up with the rover is physical. The trailer doesn't do anything but get dragged along and fed air. It doesn't need controls or brains. However, I did salvage its computer. It's small and light, so I'll bring it with me. If something goes wrong with the rover's computer en route, I'll have a spare. The trailer had tons more space now. It was time for experimentation. The HAB has 12 9-kilowatt-hour batteries. They're bulky and awkward. Over 2 meters tall, a half meter wide, and 3/4 of a meter thick. Making them bigger makes them take less mass per kilowatt-hour of storage. Yeah, it's counterintuitive. But once NASA figured out they could increase volume to decrease mass, they were all over it. Mass is the expensive part about sending things to Mars. I detached two of them. As long as I return them before the end of the day, things should be fine. The HAB mostly uses the batteries at night. With both of the trailer's airlock doors open, I was able to get the first battery in. After playing real-life Tetris for a while, I found a way to get the first battery out of the way enough to let the second battery in. Together, they eat up the whole front half of the trailer. If I hadn't cleared the useless shit out earlier today, I'd never have gotten them both in. The trailer's battery is in the undercarriage, but the main power line runs through the pressure vessel, so I was able to wire the HAB batteries directly in. No small feat in the damn EVA suit. A system check from the rover showed I had done the wiring correctly. This may all seem minor, but it's awesome. It means I can have 29 solar cells and 36 kilowatt hours of storage. I'll be able to do my 100 kilometers per day after all. 4 days out of five, anyway. According to my calendar, the Hermes resupply probe is being launched from China in 2 days, if there were no delays. If that screws up, the whole crew will be in deep shit. I'm more nervous about that than anything else. I've been in mortal danger for months. I'm kind of used to it now, but I'm nervous again. Dying would suck, but my crewmates dying would be way worse, and I won't find out how the launch went till I get to Schiaparelli. Good luck, guys. Chapter 19. "Hey, Melissa," said Robert. "Am I getting through? Can you see me?"
"Loud and clear, babe," said Commander Lewis. "The video link is solid."
"They say I have 5 minutes," Robert said.
"Better than nothing," Lewis said.
Floating in her quarters, she gently touched the bulkhead to stop drifting.
"It's nice to see you in real time for a change."
"Yeah," Robert smiled. "I can hardly notice the delay. I gotta say, I wish you were coming home." Lewis sighed.
"Me too, babe."
"Don't get me wrong," Robert quickly added. "I understand why you're doing all this. Still, from a selfish point of view, I miss my wife." "Hey, are you floating?"
"Huh?" Lewis said.
"Oh, yeah. The ship isn't spinning right now. No centripetal gravity." "Why not?"
"Because we're docking with the Taiyang Shen in a few days. We can't spin while we dock with things."
"I see," said Robert. "So how are things up on the ship? Anyone giving you shit?"
"No," Lewis shook her head. "They're a good crew. I'm lucky to have them."
"Oh, hey," Robert said. "I found a great addition to our collection."
"Oh, what did you get?"
"An original production 8-track of ABBA's greatest hits, still in the original packaging." Lewis widened her eyes.
"Seriously? A 1976 or one of the reprints?"
1976 all the way."
"Wow. Good find."
"I know, right?"
With a final shudder, the jetliner came to a stop at the gate.
"Oh, gods," said Venkat, massaging his neck. "That was the longest flight I've ever been on."
"Hmm," said Teddy, rubbing his eyes.
"At least we don't have to go to Jiuquan till tomorrow," Venkat moaned. 14.5 hours of flying is enough for one day."
"Don't get too comfortable," Teddy said. "We still have to go through customs, and we'll probably have to fill out a bunch of forms because we're U.S. government officials. It's gonna be hours before we sleep."
"Crap."
Gathering their carry-on luggage, they trudged off the plane with the rest of the weary travelers. Beijing Capital International Airport's Terminal 3 echoed with the cacophony common to huge air terminals. Venkat and Teddy moved toward the long immigration line as the Chinese citizens from their flight split off to go to a simpler point-of-entry process. As Venkat took his place in line, Teddy filed in behind him and scanned the terminal for a convenience store. Any form of caffeine would be welcome.
"Excuse me, gentlemen," came a voice from beside them. They turned to see a young Chinese man wearing jeans and a polo shirt. "My name is Su Bin Bao," he said in perfect English. "I am an employee of the China National Space Administration. I will be your guide and translator during your stay in the People's Republic of China."
"Nice to meet you, Mr. Su," Teddy said. "I'm Teddy Sanders, and this is Dr. Venkat Kapoor."
"We need sleep," Venkat said immediately. "Just as soon as we get through customs, please get us to our hotel."
"I can do better than that, Dr. Kapoor," Su smiled. "You are official guests of the People's Republic of China. You have been pre-authorized to bypass customs. I can take you to your hotel immediately."
"I love you," Venkat said.
"Tell the People's Republic of China we said thanks," Teddy added.
"I'll pass that along," Su Bin smiled.
"Helena, my love," Vogel said to his wife. "I trust you are well?"
"Yes," she said. "I'm fine, but I do miss you."
"Sorry."
"Can't be helped," she shrugged.
"How are our monkeys?"
"The children are fine," she smiled. "Eliza has a crush on a new boy in her class, and Victor has been named goalkeeper for his high school's team."
"Excellent," Vogel said. "I hear you are at mission control. Was NASA unable to pipe the signal to Bremen?"
"They could have," she said, "but it was easier for them to bring me to Houston. A free vacation to the United States.
Who am I to turn that down?"
"Well played."
"And how is my mother?"
"As well as can be expected," Helena said. "She has her good days and bad days. She did not recognize me on my last visit. In a way, it's a blessing. She doesn't have to worry about you like I do."
"She hasn't worsened?" he asked.
"No, she's about the same as when you left. The doctors are sure she'll still be here when you return."
"Good," he said.
"I was worried I'd seen her for the last time."
"Alex," Helena said, "will you be safe?"
"As safe as we can be," he said. "The ship is in perfect condition, and after receiving the Taiyang Shen, we will have all the supplies we need for the remainder of the journey."
"Be careful."
"I will, my love," Vogel promised.
"Welcome to Jiuquan," Guo Ming said. "I hope your flight was smooth."
Su Bin translated Guo Ming's words as Teddy took the second-best seat in the observation room. He looked through the glass to Jiuquan's mission control center. It was remarkably similar to Houston's, though Teddy couldn't read any of the Chinese text on the big screens.
"Yes, thank you," Teddy said. "The hospitality of your people has been wonderful. The private jet you arranged to bring us here was a nice touch."
"My people have enjoyed working with your advanced team," Guo Ming said. "The last month has been very interesting. Attaching an American probe to a Chinese booster. I believe this is the first time it's ever been done."
"It just goes to show," Teddy said. "Love of science is universal across all cultures."
Guo Ming nodded.
"My people have especially commented on the work ethic of your man, Mitch Henderson. He is very dedicated.
He's a pain in the ass, Teddy said. Subin paused before translating, but pressed on. Guo Ming laughed.
You can say that, he said. I cannot.
So, explain it again, Beck's sister Amy said. Why do you have to do an EVA?
I probably don't, Beck explained. I just need to be ready to.
Why?
In case the probe can't dock with us. If something goes wrong, it'll be my job to go out and grab it.
Can't you just move Hermes to dock with it?
No way, Beck said. Hermes is huge. It's not made for fine maneuvering control.
Why does it have to be you?
Because I'm the EVA specialist.
But I thought you were the doctor.
I am, Beck said. Everyone has multiple roles. I'm the doctor, the biologist, and the EVA specialist. Commander Lewis is our geologist. Johansson is the psi-sop and reactor tech, and so on.
How about that good-looking guy, Martinez? Amy asked. What does he do?
He pilots the MDV and MAV, Beck said. He's also married with a kid, you lecherous homewrecker.
Oh, well. How about Watney? What did he do?
He's our botanist and engineer. And don't talk about him in the past tense.
Engineer like Scotty?
Kind of, Beck said. He fixes stuff.
I bet that's coming in handy now.
Yeah, no shit.
The Chinese had arranged a small conference room for the Americans to work in. The cramped conditions were luxurious by Zhu Quan's standards. Venkat was working on budget spreadsheets when Mitch came in, so he was glad for the interruption.
They're a weird bunch, these Chinese nerds, Mitch said, collapsing into a chair. But they make a good booster.
Good, Venkat said. How's the linkage between the booster and our probe?
It all checks out, Mitch said. JPL followed the specs perfectly. It fits like a glove.
Any concerns or reservations? Venkat asked.
Yeah, I'm concerned about what I ate last night. I think it had an eyeball in it.
I'm sure there wasn't an eyeball.
The engineers here made it for me special, Mitch said.
There may have been an eyeball, Venkat said. They hate you.
Why?
Because you're a dick, Mitch, Venkat said. A total dick. To everyone.
Fair enough. So long as the probe gets to Hermes, they can burn me in effigy for all I care.
Wave to Daddy,
Marissa said, waving David's hand at the camera.
Wave to Daddy.
He's too young to know what's going on, Martinez said.
Just think of the playground cred he'll have later in life, she said. My dad went to Mars. What's your dad do?
Yes, I'm pretty awesome, he agreed.
Marissa continued to wave David's hand at the camera. David was more interested in his other hand, which was actively engaged in picking his nose.
So, Martinez said, you're pissed.
You can tell? Marissa asked. I tried to hide it.
We've been together since we were 15. I know when you're pissed.
You volunteered to extend the mission 533 days, she said. Asshole.
Yeah, Martinez said. I figured that'd be the reason.
Your son will be in kindergarten when you get back. He won't have any memories of you.
I know, Martinez said.
I have to wait another 533 days to get laid.
So do I, he said defensively.
I have to worry about you that whole time, she added.
Yeah, he said. Sorry.
She took a deep breath.
We'll get past it.
We'll get past it, he agreed.
Welcome to CNN's Mark Watney Report. Today we have the Director of Mars Operations, Venkat Kapoor. He's speaking to us live via satellite from China. Dr. Kapoor, thank you for joining us.
Happy to do it, Venkat said.
So, Dr. Kapoor, tell us about the Taiyang Shen. Why go to China to launch a probe? Why not launch it from the U.S.?
Hermes isn't going to orbit Earth, Venkat said. It's just passing by on its way to Mars, and its velocity is huge. We need a booster capable of not only escaping Earth's gravity, but matching Hermes's current velocity. Only the Taiyang Shen has enough power to do that.
Tell us about the probe itself.
It was a rush job, Venkat said. JPL only had 30 days to put it together. They had to be as safe and efficient as they could,
It's basically a shell full of food and other supplies. It has a standard satellite thruster package for maneuvering, but that's it.
And that's enough to fly to Hermes?
The Taiyang Shen will send it to Hermes. The thrusters are for fine control and docking, and JPL didn't have time to make a guidance system, so it'll be remote controlled by a human pilot.
Who will be controlling it? Kathy asked.
The Ares III pilot, Major Rick Martinez. As the probe approaches Hermes, he'll take over and guide it to the docking port.
And what if there's a problem?
Hermes will have their EVA specialist, Dr. Chris Beck, suited up and ready the whole time. If necessary, he will literally grab the probe with his hands and drag it to the docking port.
Sounds kind of unscientific, Kathy laughed.
You want unscientific? Venkat smiled. If the probe can't attach to the docking port for some reason, Beck will open the probe and carry its contents to the airlock.
Like bringing in the groceries? Kathy asked.
Exactly like that, Venkat said. And we estimate it would take 4 trips back and forth. But that's all an edge case. We don't anticipate any problems with the docking process.
Sounds like you're covering all your bases, Kathy smiled.
We have to, Venkat said. If they don't get those supplies... Well, they need those supplies.
Thanks for taking the time to answer our questions, Kathy said.
Always a pleasure, Kathy.
Johansson's father fidgeted in the chair, unsure what to say. After a moment, he pulled a handkerchief from his pocket and mopped sweat from his balding head.
What if the probe doesn't get to you? He asked.
Try not to think about that, Johansson said.
Your mother is so worried she couldn't even come.
I'm sorry, Johansson mumbled, looking down.
She can't eat, she can't sleep, she feels sick all the time. I'm not much better. How can they make you do this?
They're not making me do it, Dad. I volunteered.
Why would you do that to your mother? He demanded.
Sorry, Johansson mumbled. Watney's my crewmate. I can't just let him die.
He sighed. I wish we'd raised you to be more selfish.
She chuckled quietly.
How did I end up in this situation? I'm the district sales manager of a napkin factory. Why is my daughter in space?
Johansson shrugged.
You were always scientifically minded, he said. It was great. Straight-A student, hanging around nerdy guys too scared to try anything, no wild side at all. You were every father's dream daughter.
Thanks, Dad.
But then you got on a giant bomb that blasted you to Mars. And I mean that literally.
Technically, she corrected. The booster only took me into orbit. It was the nuclear-powered ion engine that took me to Mars.
Oh, much better.
Dad, I'll be all right. Tell Mom I'll be all right.
What good will that do? He said. She's going to be tied up in knots until you're back home.
I know, Johansson mumbled. But...
What? But what?
I won't die. I really won't, even if everything goes wrong.
What do you mean?
Johansson furrowed her brow.
Just tell Mom I won't die.
How? I don't understand.
I don't want to get into the how, Johansson said.
Look, he said, leaning toward the camera. I've always respected your privacy and independence. I never tried to pry into your life, never tried to control you. I've been really good about that, right?
Yeah.
So in exchange for a lifetime of staying out of your business, let me nose in just this once. What are you not telling me?
She fell silent for several seconds. Finally, she said,
They have a plan.
Who?
They always have a plan, she said. They work out everything in advance.
What plan?
They picked me to survive. I'm youngest. I have the skills necessary to get home alive. And I'm the smallest and need the least food.
What happens if the probe fails, Beth? Her father asked.
Everyone would die but me, she said. They'd all take pills and die. They'll do it right away so they don't use up any food. Commander Lewis picked me to be the survivor. She told me about it yesterday. I don't think NASA knows about it.
And the supplies would last until you got back to Earth?
No, she said. We have enough food left to feed 6 people for a month.
If I was the only one, it would last 6 months. With a reduced diet, I could stretch it to 9. But it'll be 17 months before I get back.
So how would you survive?
The supplies won't be the only source of food, she said.
He widened his eyes. Oh. Oh, my God.
Just tell Mom the supplies would last, okay? American and Chinese engineers cheered together at Zhuquan Mission Control. The main screen showed Taiyang Shen's contrail wafting in the chilly Gobi sky. The ship, no longer visible to the naked eye, pressed onward toward orbit. Its deafening roar dwindled to a distant rumbling thunder.
Perfect launch, Venkat exclaimed.
Of course, said Zhu Tao.
You guys really came through for us, Venkat said, and we're grateful.
Naturally.
And hey, you guys get a seat on Ares V. Everyone wins.
Venkat looked at Zhu Tao sideways.
You don't seem too happy.
I spent 4 years working on Taiyangshen, he said. So did countless other researchers, scientists, and engineers. Everyone poured their souls into construction while I waged a constant political battle to maintain funding. In the end, we built a beautiful probe, the largest, sturdiest unmanned probe in history. And now it's sitting in a warehouse. It'll never fly. The State Council won't fund another booster like that.
He turned to Venkat.
It could have been a lasting legacy of scientific research. Now it's a delivery run. We'll get a Chinese astronaut on Mars. But what science will he bring back that some other astronaut couldn't have? This operation is a net loss for mankind's knowledge.
Well, Venkat said cautiously, it's a net gain for Mark Watney.
Zhu Tao said. Distance 61 meters, velocity 2.3 meters per second, Johansson said.
No problem, Martinez said, his eyes glued to his screens.
One showed the camera feed from docking port A, the other a constant feed of the probe's telemetry. Lewis floated behind Johansson's and Martinez's stations. Beck's voice came over the radio.
Visual contact.
He stood in airlock 3, via magnetic boots, fully suited up with the outer door open. The bulky, safer unit on his back would allow him free motion in space should the need arise. An attached tether led to a spool on the wall.
Vogel, Lewis said into her headset. You in position?
Vogel stood in the still-pressurized airlock 2, suited up save his helmet.
Ja, in position und ready, he replied.
He was the emergency EVA if Beck needed rescue.
All right, Martinez, Lewis said. Bring it in.
Aye, Commander.
Distance 43 meters, velocity 2.3 meters per second, Johansson called out.
All stats nominal, Martinez reported.
Slight rotation in the probe, Johansson said. Relative rotational velocity is 0.05 revolutions per second.
Anything under 0.3 is fine, Martinez said.
The capture system can deal with it.
Probe is well within manual recovery range, Beck reported.
Copy, Lewis said.
Distance 22 meters, velocity 2.3 meters per second, Johansson said. Angle is good.
Slowing her down a little, Martinez said, sending instructions to the probe.
Velocity 1.8.
1.3, Johansson reported.
0.9.
Stable at 0.9 meters per second.
Range, Martinez asked.
12 meters, Johansson replied.
Velocity steady at 0.9 meters per second.
Angle?
Angle is good.
Then we're in line for auto capture, Martinez said.
Come to Papa.
The probe drifted gently to the docking port. Its capture boom, a long metal triangle, entered the port's funnel, scraping slightly along the edge. Once it reached the port's retractor mechanism, the automated system clamped onto the boom and pulled it in, aligning and orienting the probe automatically. After several loud clanks echoed through the ship, the computer reported success.
Docking complete, Martinez said.
Seal is tight, Johansson said. Beck, Lewis said. Your services won't be needed.
Roger that, Commander, Beck said. Closing airlock.
Vogel returned to interior, she ordered.
Copy, Commander, he said.
Airlock pressure to 100%, Beck reported. Re-entering ship.
I'm back in.
Also in sight, Vogel said.
Lewis pressed a button on her headset.
Juquan, probe docking complete. No complications.
Mitch's voice came over the comm.
Glad to hear it, Hermes. Report status of all supplies once you get them aboard and inspected.
Roger, Juquan, Lewis said.
Taking off her headset, she turned to Martinez and Johansson. Unload the probe and stow the supplies. I'm going to help Beck and Vogel desuit.
Martinez and Johansson floated down the hall toward docking port A.
So, he said, who would you have eaten first?
She glared at him.
"'Cause I think I'd be tastiest,' he continued, flexing his arm.
"'Look at that. Good, solid muscle there.
"'You're not funny. I'm free range, you know. Corn-fed.'
She shook her head and accelerated down the hall.
"'Come on. I thought you liked Mexican.'
"'Not listening,' she called back.
Chapter 20 Log Entry Sol 376.
I'm finally done with the rover modifications. The tricky part was figuring out how to maintain life support. Everything else was just work. A lot of work. I haven't been good at keeping the log up to date, so here's a recap. First, I had to finish drilling holes with the Pathfinder murder and drill. Then I chiseled out a billion little chunks between the holes. Okay, it was 759, but it felt like a billion. Then I had one big hole in the trailer. I filed down the edges to keep them from being too sharp. Remember the pop tents? I cut the bottom out of one, and the remaining canvas was the right size and shape. I used seal strips to attach it to the inside of the trailer. After pressurizing and sealing up leaks as I found them, I had a nice big balloon bulging out of the trailer. The pressurized area is easily big enough to fit the oxygenator and atmospheric regulator. One hitch. I need to put the AREC outside. The imaginatively named Atmospheric Regulator External Component is how the regulator freeze-separates air. Why sink a bunch of energy into freezing stuff when you have incredibly cold temperatures right outside? The regulator pumps air to the AREC to let Mars freeze it. It does this along a tube that runs through a valve in the HAB's wall. The return air comes back through another tube just like it. Getting the tubing through the balloon canvas wasn't too hard. I have several spare valve patches. Basically, they're 10 by 10 centimeter patches of HAB canvas with a valve in the middle. Why do I have these? Consider what would happen on a normal mission if the regulator valve broke. They'd have to scrub the whole mission. Easier to send spares. The AREC is fairly small. I made a shelf for it just under the solar panel shelves. Now everything's ready for when I eventually move the regulator and AREC over. There's still a lot to do. I'm not in any hurry. I've been taking it slow. 1 4-hour EVA per day spent on work, the rest of the time to relax in the HAB. Plus, I'll take a day off every now and then, especially if my back hurts. I can't afford to injure myself now. I'll try to be better about this log. Now that I might actually get rescued, people will probably read it. I'll be more diligent and log every day. Log Entry Sol 380 I finished the heat reservoir. Remember my experiments with the RTG and having a hot bath? Same principle, but I came up with an improvement. Submerge the RTG. No heat will be wasted that way. I started with a large rigid sample container, or plastic box, to people who don't work at NASA. I ran a tube through the open top and down the inside wall. Then I coiled it in the bottom to make a spiral. I glued it in place like that and sealed the end. Using my smallest drill bit, I put dozens of little holes in the coil. The idea is for the freezing return air from the regulator to pass through the water as a bunch of little bubbles. The increased surface area will get the heat into the air better. Then I got a medium flexible sample container, Ziploc bag, and tried to seal the RTG in it, but the RTG has an irregular shape and I couldn't get all the air out of the bag. I can't allow any air in there.
Instead of heat going to the water, some would get stored in the air, which could superheat and melt the bag. I tried a bunch of times, but there was always an air pocket I couldn't get out. I was getting pretty frustrated until I remembered I have an airlock. Suiting up, I went to airlock 2 and depressurized to a full vacuum. I plopped the RTG in the bag and closed it. Perfect vacuum seal. Next came some testing. I put the bagged RTG at the bottom of the container and filled it with water. It holds 20 liters, and the RTG quickly heated it. It was gaining a degree per minute. I let it go until it was a good 40 degrees Celsius. Then I hooked up the regulator's return airline to my contraption and watched the results. It worked great. The air bubbled through just like I'd hoped. Even better, the bubbles agitated the water, which distributed the heat evenly. I let it run for an hour, and the HABs started to get cold. The RTG's heat can't keep up with the total loss from the HABs' impressive surface area. Not a problem. I've already established it's plenty to keep the rover warm. I reattached the return airline to the regulator, and things got back to normal. Log entry. Sol 381. I've been thinking about laws on Mars. Yeah, I know, it's a stupid thing to think about, but I have a lot of free time. There's an international treaty saying no country can lay claim to anything that's not on Earth. And by another treaty, if you're not in any country's territory, maritime law applies. So Mars is international waters. NASA is an American non-military organization, and it owns the HAB. So while I'm in the HAB, American law applies. As soon as I step outside, I'm in international waters. Then when I get in the rover, I'm back to American law. Here's the cool part. I will eventually go to Schiaparelli and commandeer the Ares IV lander. Nobody explicitly gave me permission to do this, and they can't until I'm aboard Ares IV and operating the comm system. After I board Ares IV, before talking to NASA, I will take control of a craft in international waters without permission. That makes me a pirate. A space pirate. Log entry. Sol 383. You may be wondering what else I do with my free time. I spend a lot of it sitting around on my lazy ass watching TV, but so do you, so don't judge. Also, I plan my trip. Pathfinder was a cake run. Flat, level ground all the way. The only problem was navigating. But the trip to Schiaparelli will mean going over massive elevation changes. I have a rough satellite map of the whole planet. It doesn't have much detail, but I'm lucky to have it at all. NASA didn't expect me to wander 3,200 kilometers from the HAB. Acidalia Planitia, where I am, has a relatively low elevation. So does Schiaparelli. But between them, it goes up and down by 10 kilometers. There's going to be a lot of dangerous driving. Things will be smooth while I'm in Acidalia, but that's only the first 650 kilometers. After that comes the crater-riddled terrain of Arabia Terra. I do have one thing going for me, and I swear it's a gift from God. For some geological reason, there's a valley called Morth Vallis that's perfectly placed. Millions of years ago, it was a river. Now it's a valley that juts into the brutal terrain of Arabia, almost directly towards Schiaparelli. It's much gentler terrain than the rest of Arabia Terra, and the far end looks like a smooth ascent out of the valley. Between Acidalia and Morth Vallis, I'll get 1,350 kilometers of relatively easy terrain. The other 1,850 kilometers? Well, that won't be so nice, especially when I have to descend into Schiaparelli itself. Ugh. Anyway, Morth Vallis. Awesome. Log entry. Sol 385. The worst part of the Pathfinder trip was being trapped in the rover. I had to live in a cramped environment that was full of junk and reeked of body odor. Same as my college days. Rimshot! Seriously, though, it sucked. It was 22 souls of abject misery. I planned to leave for Schiaparelli 100 souls before my rescue, or death. And I swear to God I'll rip my own face off if I have to live in the rover for that long. I need a place to stay where I can stand up and take a few steps without hitting things, and no, being outside in a goddamn EVA suit doesn't count. I need personal space, not 50 kilograms of clothing. So today I started making a tent. Somewhere I can relax while the batteries recharge. Somewhere I can lie down comfortably while sleeping. I recently sacrificed one of my two pop tents to be the trailer balloon, but the other is in perfect shape. Even better, it has an attachment for the rover's airlock. Before I made it a potato farm, its original purpose was to be a lifeboat for the rover. I could attach the pop tent to either vehicle's airlock. I'm going with the rover instead of the trailer. The rover has the computer and controls. If I need to know the status of anything, like life support or how well the battery is charging, I'll need access. This way I'll be able to walk right in. No EVA. Also, while traveling, I'll keep the tent folded up in the rover. In an emergency, I can get to it fast. The pop tent is the basis of my bedroom, but not the whole thing. The tent's not very big, not much more space than the rover, but it has the airlock attachment, so it's a great place to start. My plan is to double the floor area and double the height. That'll give me a nice, big space to relax in. For the floor, I'll use the original flooring material from the two pop tents. If I didn't, my bedroom would become a big hamster ball because hab canvas is flexible. When you fill it with pressure, it wants to become a sphere. That's not a useful shape. To combat this, the hab and pop tents have special flooring material. It unfolds as a bunch of little segments that won't open beyond 180 degrees, so it remains flat. The pop tent base is a hexagon. I have another base left over from what is now the trailer balloon. When I'm done, the bedroom will be two adjacent hexes with walls around them and a crude ceiling. It's going to take a lot of glue to make this happen. Log entry. Sol 387. The pop tent is 1.2 meters tall. It's not made for comfort. It's made for astronauts to cower in while their crewmates rescue them. I want 2 meters. I want to be able to stand. I don't think that's too much to ask. On paper, it's not hard to do. I just need to cut canvas pieces to the right shapes, seal them together, then seal them to the existing canvas and flooring. But that's a lot of canvas. I started this mission with 6 square meters, and I've used up most of that, mostly on sealing the breach from when the hab blew up. Goddamn airlock one. Anyway, my bedroom will take 30 square meters of the stuff, way the hell more than I have left. Fortunately, I have an alternate supply of hab canvas. The hab. Problem is, follow me closely here, the science is pretty complicated. If I cut a hole in the hab, the air won't stay inside anymore. I'll have to depressurize the hab, cut chunks out, and put it back together, smaller. I spent today figuring out the exact sizes and shapes of canvas I'll need. I need to not fuck this up, so I triple-checked everything. I even made a model out of paper. The hab is a dome. If I take canvas from near the floor, I can pull the remaining canvas down and reseal it. The hab will become a lopsided dome, but that shouldn't matter, as long as it holds pressure. I only need it to last another 62 sols. I drew the shapes on the wall with a Sharpie. Then I spent a long time remeasuring them and making sure, over and over, that they were right. That was all I did today. Might not seem like much, but the math and design work took all day. Now it's time for dinner. I've been eating potatoes for weeks. Theoretically, with my 3-quarter ration plan, I should still be eating food packs. But 3-quarter ration is hard to maintain, so now I'm eating potatoes. I have enough to last till launch, so I won't starve, but I'm pretty damn sick of potatoes. Also, they have a lot of fiber, so let's just say it's good I'm the only guy on this planet. I saved 5 meal packs for special occasions. I wrote their names on each one. I get to eat Departure the day I leave for Schiaparelli. I'll eat Halfway when I reach the 1600-kilometer mark and Arrival when I get there. The fourth one is Survived Something That Should Have Killed Me, because some fucking thing will happen. I just know it. I don't know what it'll be, but it'll happen. The rover will break down, or I'll come down with fatal hemorrhoids, or I'll run into hostile Martians or some shit. When I do, if I live, I get to eat that meal pack. The fifth one is reserved for the day I launch. It's labeled Last Meal. Maybe that's not such a good name. Log entry. Sol 388. I started the day with a potato. I washed it down with some Martian coffee. That's my name for hot water with a caffeine pill dissolved in it. I ran out of real coffee months ago. My first order of business was a careful inventory of the HAB. I needed to root out anything that would have a problem with losing atmospheric pressure. Of course, everything in the HAB had a crash course and depressurization a few months back, but this time would be controlled, and I might as well do it right. The main thing is the water. I lost 300 liters to sublimation when the HAB blew up. This time, that won't happen. I drained the water reclaimer and sealed all the tanks. The rest was just collecting knickknacks and dumping them in Airlock 3. Anything I could think of that doesn't do well in a near vacuum. All the pens, vitamin bottles, probably not necessary, but I'm not taking chances. Medical supplies, etc. Then I did a controlled shutdown of the HAB. The critical components are designed to survive a vacuum. HAB depress is one of the many scenarios NASA accounted for. One system at a time, I cleanly shut them all down, ending with the main computer itself. I suited up and depressurized the HAB. Last time, the canvas collapsed and made a mess of everything. That's not supposed to happen. The dome of the HAB is mostly supported by air pressure, but there are flexible reinforcing poles across the inside to hold up the canvas. It's how the HAB was assembled in the first place. I watched as the canvas gently settled onto the poles. To confirm the depressurization, I opened both doors of Airlock 2. I left Airlock 3 alone. It maintained pressure for its cargo of random crap. Then, I cut shit up. I'm not a materials engineer. My design for the bedroom isn't elegant. It's just a 6-meter perimeter and a ceiling. No, it won't have right angles and corners. Pressure vessels don't like those. It'll balloon out to a more round shape. Anyway, it means I only needed to cut 2 big-ass strips of canvas, one for the walls and one for the ceiling. After mangling the HAB, I pulled the remaining canvas down to the flooring and resealed it. Ever set up a camping tent, from the inside, while wearing a suit of armor? It was a pain in the ass. I repressurized to 1/20th of an atmosphere to see if it could hold pressure. Ha-ha! Of course it couldn't. Leaks galore. Time to find them. On Earth, tiny particles get attached to water or wear down to nothing. On Mars, they just hang around. The top layer of sand is like talcum powder. I went outside with a bag and scraped along the surface. I got some normal sand, but plenty of powder, too. I had the HAB maintain the 1/20th atmosphere, backfilling as air leaked out. Then I puffed the bag to get the smallest particles to float around. They were quickly drawn to where the leaks were. As I found each leak, I spot-sealed it with resin. It took hours, but I finally got a good seal. I tell you, the HAB looks pretty ghetto now. One whole side of it is lower than the rest. I'll have to hunch down when I'm over there. I pressurized to a full atmosphere and waited an hour. No leaks. It's been a long, physically taxing day. I'm totally exhausted, but I can't sleep. Every sound scares the shit out of me. Is that the HAB popping? No? Okay. What was that? Oh, nothing? Okay. It's a terrible thing to have my life depend on my half-assed handiwork. Time to get a sleeping pill from the medical supplies. Log entry. Sol 389. What the hell is in those sleeping pills? It's the middle of the day. After 2 cups of Martian coffee, I woke up a little. I won't be taking another one of those pills. It's not like I have to go to work in the morning. Anyway, as you can tell from how not dead I am, the HAB stayed sealed overnight. The seal is solid. Ugly as hell, but solid. Today's task was the bedroom. Assembling the bedroom was way easier than resealing the HAB, because this time I didn't have to wear an EVA suit. I made the whole thing inside the HAB. Why not? It's just canvas. I can roll it up and take it out an airlock when I'm done. First, I did some surgery on the remaining pop tent. I needed to keep the rover airlock connector and surrounding canvas. The rest of the canvas had to go. Why hack off most of the canvas only to replace it with more canvas? Seems. NASA is good at making things. I am not. The dangerous part of this structure won't be the canvas. It'll be the seams. And I get less total seam length by not trying to use the existing pop tent canvas.
After hacking away most of the remaining tent, I seal-stripped the two pop tent floors together. Then I sealed the new canvas pieces into place. It was so much easier without the EVA suit on. So much easier. Then I had to test it. Again, I did it in the HAB. I brought an EVA suit into the tent with me and closed the mini airlock door. Then I fired up the EVA suit, leaving the helmet off. I told it to bump the pressure up to 1.2 atmospheres. It took a little while to bring it up to par, and I had to disable some alarms on the suit.
Hey, I'm pretty sure the helmet's not on.
It depleted most of the N2 tank, but was finally able to bring up the pressure. Then I sat around and waited. I breathed. The suit regulated the air. All was well. I watched the suit readouts carefully to see if it had to replace any lost air. After an hour with no noticeable change, I declared the first test a success. I rolled up the whole thing, wadded up really, and took it out to the rover. You know, I suit up a lot these days. I bet that's another record I hold. A typical Martian astronaut does what, 40 EVAs? I've done several hundred. Once I brought the bedroom to the rover, I attached it to the airlock from the inside. Then I pulled the release to let it loose. I was still wearing my EVA suit because I'm not an idiot. The bedroom fired out and filled in 3 seconds. The open airlock hatchway led directly to it, and it appeared to be holding pressure. Just like before, I let it sit for an hour, and just like before, it worked great. Unlike the HAB canvas resealing, I got this one right on the first try, mostly because I didn't have to do it with a damn EVA suit on. Originally, I planned to let my bedroom sit overnight and check on it in the morning, but I ran into a problem. I can't get out if I do that. The rover has only one airlock, and the bedroom was attached to it. There was no way for me to get out without detaching the bedroom, and no way to attach and pressurize the bedroom without being inside the rover. It's a little scary. The first time I test the thing overnight will be with me in it. But that'll be later. I've done enough today. Log entry. Sol 390. I have to face facts. I'm done prepping the rover. I don't feel like I'm done, but it's ready to go. Food. 1,692 potatoes. Vitamin pills. Water. 620 liters. Shelter. Rover, trailer, bedroom. Air. Rover and trailer combined storage. 14 liters liquid O2, 14 liters liquid N2. Life support. Oxygenator and atmospheric regulator. 418 hours of use and discard CO2 filters for emergencies. Power. 36 kilowatt hours of storage. Carrying capacity for 29 solar cells. Heat. 1400 watt RTG. Homemade reservoir to heat regulators return air. Electric heater and rover as a backup. Disco. Lifetime supply. I'm leaving here on Sol 449. That gives me 59 sols to test everything and fix whatever isn't working right. Then decide what's coming with me and what's staying behind. And plot a route to Schiaparelli using a grainy satellite map. And rack my brains trying to think of anything important I forgot. Since Sol 6, all I've wanted to do was get the hell out of here. Now the prospect of leaving the HAB behind scares the shit out of me. I need some encouragement. I need to ask myself, what would an Apollo astronaut do? He'd drink 3 whiskey sours, drive his Corvette to the launch pad, then fly to the moon in a command module smaller than my rover. Man, those guys were cool. Chapter 21. Log entry. Sol 431. I'm working out how to pack. It's harder than it sounds. I have 2 pressure vessels, the rover and the trailer. They're connected by hoses, but they're also not stupid. If one loses pressure, the other will instantly seal off the shared lines. There's a grim logic to this. If the rover breaches, I'm dead. No point in planning around that. But if the trailer breaches, I'll be fine. That means I should put everything important in the rover. Everything that goes in the trailer has to be comfortable in near vacuum and freezing temperatures. Not that I anticipate that, but you know, plan for the worst.
The saddlebags I made for the Pathfinder trip will come in handy for food storage. I can't just store potatoes in the rover or trailer. They'd rot in the warm, pressurized environment. I'll keep some in the rover for easy access, but the rest will be outside in the giant freezer that is this planet. The trailer will be packed pretty tight. It'll have two bulky HAB batteries, the atmospheric regulator, the oxygenator, and my homemade heat reservoir. It would be more convenient to have the reservoir in the rover, but it has to be near the regulator's return airfeed. The rover will be pretty packed, too. When I'm driving, I'll keep the bedroom folded up near the airlock, ready for emergency egress. Also, I'll have the two functional EVA suits in there with me, and anything that might be needed for emergency repairs. Toolkits, spare parts, my nearly depleted supply of sealant, the other rover's main computer, just in case, and all 620 glorious liters of water. And a plastic box to serve as a toilet. One with a good lid.
"How's Vatni doing?" Venkat asked. Mindy looked up from her computer with a start.
"Dr. Kapoor."
"I hear you caught a pic of him during an EVA."
Yeah, Mindy said, typing on her keyboard. "I noticed things would always change around 9 a.m. local time. People usually keep the same patterns, so I figured he likes to start work around then. I did some minor realignment to get 17 picks between 9 and 9:10. He showed up in one of them."
"Good thinking. Can I see the pic?"
"Sure."
She brought up the image on her screen. Venkat peered at the blurry image.
"Is this as good as it gets?"
"Well, it is a photo taken from orbit," Mindy said. "The NSA enhanced the image with the best software they have."
"Wait, what?" Venkat stammered. "The NSA?"
"Yeah, they called and offered to help out. Same software they use for enhancing spy satellite imagery."
Venkat shrugged.
"It's amazing how much red tape gets cut when someone's rooting for one man to survive."
He pointed to the screen.
"What's Vatni doing here?"
"I think he's loading something into the rover."
"When was the last time he worked on the trailer?" Venkat asked.
"Not for a while. Why doesn't he write us notes more often?"
Venkat shrugged.
"He's busy. He works most of the daylight hours, and arranging rocks to spell a message takes time and energy."
"So," Mindy said, "why'd you come here in person? We could have done all this over email."
"Actually, I came to talk to you," he said. "There's going to be a change in your responsibilities. From now on, instead of managing the satellites around Mars, your sole responsibility is watching Mark Watney."
"What?" Mindy said. "What about course corrections and alignment?"
"We'll assign that to other people," Venkat said. "From now on, your only focus is examining imagery of Ares III."
"That's a demotion," Mindy said. "I'm an orbital engineer, and you're turning me into a glorified peeping Tom."
"It's short-term," Venkat said. "And we'll make it up to you. Thing is, you've been doing it for months, and you're an expert at identifying elements of Ares III from satellite pics. We don't have anyone else who can do that."
"Why is this suddenly so important?"
"He's running out of time," Venkat said. "We don't know how far along he is on the rover modifications, but we do know he's only got 16 sols to get them done. We need to know exactly what he's doing. I've got media outlets and senators asking for his status all the time. The president even called me a couple of times."
"But seeing his status doesn't help," Mindy said. "It's not like we can do anything about it if he falls behind. This is a pointless task."
"How long have you worked for the government?" Venkat sighed.
Log entry. Sol 434. "The time has come to test this baby out. This presents a problem. Unlike on my Pathfinder trip, I have to take vital life support elements out of the HAB if I'm going to do a real dry run. When you take the atmospheric regulator and oxygenator out of the HAB, you're left with a tent. A big, round tent that can't support life. It's not as risky as it seems. As always, the dangerous part about life support is managing carbon dioxide. When the air gets to 1% CO2, you start getting symptoms of poisoning, so I need to keep the HAB's mix below that. The HAB's internal volume is about 120,000 liters. Breathing normally, it would take me over 2 days to bring the CO2 level up to 1%, and I wouldn't even put a dent in the O2 level. So it's safe to move the regulator and oxygenator over for a while. Both are way too big to fit through the trailer airlock. Lucky for me, they came